Think about taking a massive, terrifying exam. You know, the kind where your stomach is just in knots?
Oh, yeah, the absolute worst feeling.
Right. But then you sit down, you open the booklet, and the teacher has accidentally stapled the master answer key right to the front page.
Wow, that's just an immediate wave of relief.
Exactly. That immediate realization of, oh, I actually know exactly what we are dealing with here. Well, that is exactly the feeling we get today.
Welcome to this deep dive. Today we're getting into agricultural espionage, botanical mimicry, and a 2,000-year-old answer key to a text that normally baffles people.
It really does baffle people. We're talking about the parable of the weeds from Matthew chapter 13, right?
That's the one.
Yeah, because you know, ancient parables often operate like a Rorschach test.
Oh, for sure.
Everyone sees a completely different symbol, and scholars spend centuries arguing over the interpretations. But here, Jesus actually provides a direct one-to-one allegorical translation right in the text.
Which is so rare.
So let's lay out that baseline right at the top so that you, listening, have the exact same answer key that we do. The text defines the symbols, like, very clearly.
Yep, no ambiguity at all.
Right. So the sower of the seed is the Son of Man, which is Jesus. The field where everything happens is the world. The good seed represents the people of the kingdom. And the weeds, they are the people of the evil one.
And the enemy who plants those weeds is the devil.
Exactly. The harvest is the end of the age. And finally, the harvesters are angels.
Having that literal answer key right up front is just, it frees us up so much. We don't have to debate what the symbols
We
mean.
get to explore the why.
Right. We can look at the highly specific botanical reality of ancient agriculture because, you know, it helps us understand why these specific plants and farming practices were chosen to illustrate these like really profound themes about good, evil, human judgment, and patience.
Yeah, and to understand the theology of this text, we actually have to get our hands dirty.
Yeah.
Like, literally, we have to dig into the dirt of the first century world.
Because it's not what we think of today.
No, not at all. When we hear the word weed today, most of us picture, I don't know, a dandelion popping up in a front lawn.
Or some crabgrass pushing through a crack in the
Right,
driveway.
exactly. It's an obvious nuisance. You see it, you pull it, you move on. But the plant referenced in this parable is an entirely different biological mechanism.
It really is. The Greek word used in the original text is Zania.
Zivania.
Yeah. And botanists and historians universally identify this as a specific plant called bearded darnel or Lolium temulentum, if you want the scientific name.
Which sounds like a Harry Potter spell.
It kind of does, yeah. But bearded darnel is an absolute master of botanical mimicry. It has literally evolved to survive by perfectly imitating agricultural crops, specifically wheat.
And this mimicry, it isn't just a vague resemblance, right?
No, it's uncanny. For the first several months of its growth cycle, bearded darnel is virtually indistinguishable from actual wheat.
Wow.
The blades are the exact same shade of green, the stalks grow at the exact same rate, and the leaves mirror the wheat perfectly.
So a farmer walking their field in the early months of spring would just look out over this sea of green and see what appears to be a perfectly healthy, uniform crop of wheat.
Completely uniform. The deception is total above ground, but it's actually what is happening beneath the soil that makes darnel so insidious.
The root system, right?
Yes, the root system of the darnel doesn't just grow next to the wheat, it actively seeks it out.
That is so creepy.
It really is. The fibrous roots of the zizania tangled directly into the root system of the wheat, literally fusing together in the dirt.
So they're competing for the same water and nutrients.
Exactly. But they're also structurally binding themselves to the good crop.
Okay, so this isn't like finding a brightly colored weed in a manicured green lawn where it sticks out immediately.
Not at all.
This is far more like a deep cover spy who has infiltrated an organization. They're wearing the exact same uniform. They're learning the exact same daily routines.
Blending right in.
Yeah, they're embedding themselves so deeply into the social fabric of the building that you literally cannot tell who is who. And just like a deed cover spy, the truth is only revealed at the very final mission.
Right. And in the agricultural cycle, that final mission is the harvest season.
So they just look like wheat for months and months.
Yep. It is only right at the end of the season, when the plants finally form their ears, you know, the heads of grain, that the difference becomes stark and undeniable.
You go from total camouflage to a glaring visual contrast.
Exactly. The physiological difference at that stage is fascinating. When true wheat reaches full maturity, the heads become heavy with this nourishing, life-sustaining grain.
Because they're so heavy with that good fruit, the stalks physically bow down under the weight, right?
Yes, they bend toward the earth. But the bearded darnel, the zizania, it doesn't produce heavy, nourishing grain. Its heads stand rigidly straight up.
And those heads aren't just empty, they're actually dangerous.
Extremely dangerous. The seeds of the darnel often harbor a toxic fungus. In fact, that Latin name we mentioned, temulentum, it essentially translates to drunk.
Wait, really? Drunk?
Yeah, because consuming darnel seeds causes a form of intoxication, severe nausea, loss of balance, and in large enough quantities, it can actually be fatal.
Oh, wow.
It is a literal poisonous imposter.
Which brings up a massive logistical question for me. If darnel mimics wheat so perfectly, and it's this highly specific poisonous plant, how does a farmer end up with a field completely infested with it?
Right. It doesn't just happen by accident.
Exactly. This isn't a spore that just accidentally blows in on a spring breeze. An infestation of this skill requires intent.
And the catalyst for the entire plot of the parable hinges on that exact intent. The master of the field wakes up, sees the eventual infestation, and states a chilling reality. An enemy has done this.
The story specifies that this enemy came and sowed these weeds while everyone was sleeping.
Operating under the cover of darkness.
It's a covert intrusion. And I think it establishes a core concept about the nature of evil in this framework. Evil is an intrusion into the field.
It wasn't supposed to be there.
Right. It was never part of the sower's original planting. It doesn't inherently belong there. It has to be smuggled in.
And looking at the historical context makes this even more striking, because sowing weeds into someone else's field wasn't just like a metaphor Jesus invented.
Wait, it was a real thing.
It was an actual literal crime in the ancient world. Under Roman law, sowing darnel in an enemy's field was a prosecutable offense.
You could be taken to court for planting weeds.
Yes. It was recognized by the legal system as an act of profound malice.
The psychology of that is just staggering to me. Yeah. Imagine the ancient Roman world. Someone is actually going to the tremendous physical trouble of sneaking into their neighbor's farm in the dead of night.
With heavy bags of seeds.
Right. Hauling bags of poisonous weed seeds and painstakingly scattering them across acres of land. They aren't trying to grow a crop to feed their own family.
No, they get nothing out of it.
They're expending massive amounts of energy solely to ruin their neighbor's livelihood. It is pure agricultural terrorism.
And the law recognized that the only motivation for this crime was sheer destruction. The devil's goal in the parable isn't just to cultivate his own people.
His goal is to choke out the wheat.
Exactly. To siphon off the resources of the field and ultimately ruin the sower's harvest.
Which means the evil described here is inherently parasitic. Yep. It actually requires the good field to even exist and do its damage.
That's a great point.
Because if the enemy just walked out into an empty dirt lot in the middle of nowhere and planted bags of darnel, nobody would care.
Right. The weeds would just sit there.
The sabotage only works because it actively exploits the good soil, the rain, and the sunlight that were meticulously prepared for the wheat.
It is entirely parasitic. It steals the resources meant for the good seed. And, you know, faced with this kind of malicious, parasitic sabotage, knowing someone has literally broken the law to ruin your field, the natural human reaction is exactly what the servants in the story suggest.
They run to the master and say, "Do you want us to go and pull him up?"
Right. It's the immediate instinct for justice. You see a threat, you eradicate the threat.
You want to purge the field right now.
Exactly. But the master gives a highly counterintuitive response. He just says, "No."
A hard stop. Do not pull out the poisonous weeds.
And the reasoning he gives translates that botanical reality we talked about directly into a profound spiritual warning against human judgment. The master says, "No, because while you are pulling the weeds, you may uproot the wheat with them."
Which goes right back to the mimicry and those tangled root systems.
Right.
Because darnel is visually indistinguishable from wheat until full maturity. Human beings simply lack the capacity to sort them accurately.
It just can't see the difference.
We look out at the field, we think we spot a weed, we think we have perfectly identified the bad guy, but human sight is incredibly flawed.
Yeah.
What we think is a weed might actually just be immature wheat that hasn't fully developed yet.
And if we violently rip it out of the ground based on our limited, flawed perception, we destroy the sower's actual crop.
And even if we do correctly identify a weed, the subterranean reality makes extraction impossible.
Right, the fused roots.
Remember how the roots of the darnel and the wheat fused together in the soil? In human society, the lives of the righteous and the wicked are deeply, profoundly intertwined.
We are knotted together socially, economically, familiarly.
It's like trying to untangle a massive ball of cables behind a television. You know what I mean?
Oh, I hate doing that.
Right. You see the one frayed, sparking wire that is ruining the picture, and you just want to yank it out of the wall. But you're terrified of unplugging the wrong thing and shutting down the entire system.
Absolutely.
Except in this scenario, the cables aren't just tangled. They're literally melted and fused together at the base. You cannot violently rip one out without snapping the good cables in half.
And when you look at history, you see the devastating tragedies that occur when humanity ignores this warning.
When we try to play the role of the harvester.
Exactly. Whenever humans attempt violent eradication of evil to create a perfectly, you know, pure field or society, whether it's the Crusades, the Inquisitions, witch hunts, or even modern extreme cancel cultures, the collateral damage is always horrific.
Because we just don't have the omniscience to do it cleanly.
We don't. The attempt to purge the weeds inevitably results in the mass destruction of the innocent wheat.
We grab a shovel, think we are doing the master a massive favor by cleaning up his farm, and we end up destroying the very crop we claim to be protecting.
Which leaves the servants in the parable and us really in a very uncomfortable position.
Oh, very uncomfortable.
Because if we are explicitly commanded by the master not to violently rip out the weeds, we are forced to live in a mixed field.
And I have to be honest here, and this is where I think a lot of people struggle with this text. Telling people to just let the weeds grow feels like a massive cop-out.
I can see why people feel that way.
Yeah. It feels like an endorsement of apathy. I mean, if a CEO discovers a highly toxic manager who is actively ruining the company culture and harming employees, they don't say, well, let's just let them grow together with the good employees until retirement.
Right. They fire them.
They remove the poison. So why does this parable demand what looks like total passivity in the face of active evil?
That is the friction at the absolute heart of the text. And it was a radical, shocking adjustment for the first century audience as well.
Because they wanted a revolution.
Exactly. Many of them expected the Messiah to be a conquering military figure who would arrive, immediately eradicate the corrupt Roman occupiers, purge the sinners from their own ranks, and just, you know, establish a perfectly pure, pristine kingdom overnight.
They wanted the weeds pulled violently and immediately.
They wanted the pristine, manicured lawn.
They really did.
But Jesus is essentially declaring that this stage of the kingdom does not operate by immediate eradication. Good and evil will grow side by side.
They will share the exact same soil,
receive the same rain, and soak in the same sunlight. The central command is explicitly, let both grow together until the harvest.
But again, to a human mind, that delay in justice looks like a failure of the system. We see bad things happening in our communities, we see the innocent suffering because of the parasitic weeds, and we think the farmer has abandoned the farm.
Or that he just doesn't care enough to clean it up.
Right.
It is entirely natural to perceive it that way. We interpret delay as apathy. But theological scholars define the master's response here as eschatological patience.
Eschatological patience.
Yes, it is not apathy. It is a fiercely protective love for the wheat.
Walk us through the mechanics of that patience. How does leaving the poison in the ground protect the good crop?
Well, the master is tolerating the temporary, frustrating, and even damaging presence of the weeds specifically to ensure that not a single stalk of wheat is lost prematurely as collateral damage.
Right.
He is willing to endure the agonizing presence of the wicked in his field to guard the innocent and give them the time they need to reach full maturity.
So the priority isn't destroying the weeds as fast as possible.
No. The ultimate priority is preserving the wheat at all costs.
That reframes your entire experience of living in a flawed world. The presence of evil isn't proof that the sower failed to plant good seed, and it isn't proof that he doesn't care.
Not at all.
It is simply the reality of living in a contested field. The patience of the master is a calculated burden he bears to keep us from being uprooted.
It is a calculated burden, but it is really vital to recognize that this patience is not infinite. The command is let them grow together until.
Until.
Yes. There is a definitive time limit on this tolerance.
The expiration date is the harvest, the end of the age.
Exactly. The parable demands radical tolerance and restraint in the present, but it promises the absolute certainty of final justice in the future.
So the separation of the mixed field will happen.
It will. But crucially, according to the answer key Jesus gives, the sorting is not done by the servants.
It is done by the harvesters.
Yeah.
The angels.
Right. It completely removes the burden of ultimate judgment out of human hands.
We are relieved of the duty of walking through the field with a clipboard, trying to figure out who is a weed and who is wheat.
Because we are entirely unqualified for that job. The final sorting is reserved for a realm of absolute omniscience at the end of the age. Precisely because at the harvest season, the botanical reality finally reveals the undeniable truth.
You don't have to be a mind reader or a theological expert to tell them apart anymore. The disguise falls away completely.
It does. At maturity, the truth of every plant, and by extension, you know, every person's life and the logic of the parable is revealed entirely by the fruit they bear.
And the visual distinction at the end is just elegant. It's absolute.
It really is.
The true wheat physically bows down. It bends in humility under the sheer weight of the good, nourishing, life-sustaining grain it has produced over a lifetime in the field.
While the poisonous darnel, the zizania, it just stands rigidly straight up.
Completely arrogant.
Yes, it is entirely arrogant, bearing no weight, offering absolutely nothing of value, and containing only bitterness and toxicity.
That undeniable visual distinction determines the final outcome. The text is unambiguous. The weeds that stand straight and bitter are gathered up and burned in judgment.
But the wheat, bowed under the weight of its fruit, is meticulously gathered and brought into the barn.
Which represents ultimate salvation, security, and presence with God.
Exactly.
You know, when you trace the entire arc of this deep dive, it is amazing how much a single agricultural detail unlocks.
It's incredible.
We started with the specific biological mechanics of bearded darnel, its ability to mimic, its parasitic roots, its toxic seeds. We tracked how that plant was used as a literal weapon in ancient Roman agricultural crime.
Agricultural terrorism.
Right. And we saw how this master of disguise serves as a profound living metaphor. It forces us to accept the uncomfortable coexistence of good and evil.
It really issues a severe warning against the collateral damage of our own hasty human judgment.
And it reveals a God whose patience is fiercely protective of his people.
I think the most practical application you can take into your daily life is this. When you look around at the world today, or even if you just look at the dynamics in your own workplace, your neighborhood, or your social circles, and you see a tangled, frustrating mess of good and bad intertwined, remember the master's instruction.
You are living in a contested field.
Yes. It is not your job to grab a shovel and violently uproot the entire system. Your limited sight will inevitably destroy the very good you are so desperately trying to protect.
We just have to trust the sower, endure the mixed field, and trust that the harvest is coming. As we wrap up this deep dive, there is one final thought I want to leave you with. Something to chew on that builds on the biology we explored today.
Oh, I love a good final thought.
Well, we established that the bearded darnel looks perfectly, flawlessly like wheat for almost its entire life cycle. It wears the right uniform, it blends into the field, and it's only at the very end, at full maturity, that the disguise fails. So it makes you wonder, does this mean that our own true character isn't defined by how we look, how we talk, or the social groups we blend into while we are comfortably growing in the field? Is our character actually defined entirely by the kind of fruit we eventually produce when the intense, undeniable pressure of the harvest season finally arrives?